it's the Southside's own Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
There's blast deep into the night, and a two-run homer for Baez.
We're going to get a 13-yard gain here on fourth down. And right now, not looking good. Trubisky's going to run it, and he is going to get a first down. How about Trubisky to the 42-yard line? Oh, my goodness.
Bentley play action. So Jake Bentley chased. The Chef Smith.
Roquan Smith. He's the highlight show of this defense.
In the ring. Steamboat's got him up. A slam. McClair hits our train. 1-2. He did it. He did it. Steamboat lined up. McClair has done it. McClair has done it.
And there it goes. Abreu massacres this ball to left center field.
Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
What's up and welcome in. You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Open phone lines for you, 312-332-ESPN, 332-3776 is the telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, twitter.com, tweetjhood. Saying what's up to you all watching on Periscope right now, periscope.com. Also on Instagram, IGJHood. We've got to reveal our question that we have on Instagram. If you follow me on IGJHood, you know what the question is. We have to let you guys know what the answer is to the question we have up there on IGJ Hood. We will hear from Nick Friedell, who covers the NBA for ESPN and ESPN.com. We'll talk to him coming up in 7 minutes here on ESPN 1000. Brad Edwards will be with us as well. Brad Edwards breaks down college football for the Campus Conversation podcast on ESPN.com, as well as the College Game Day show, the radio version. He's part of that every Saturday right here on ESPN 1000. So good to talk to Brad about some of the storylines, including Notre Dame, still undefeated, could run the table, two more games for them, and also Northwestern. Try to figure out the conundrum that is Northwestern football. It is amazing. Northwestern, not necessarily great in the non-conference, but when it comes to conference play, is the reason why they're in first place. It's why they're on the precipice of doing some great things here moving forward throughout the rest of the regular season into an opportunity for the title game. So it's Northwestern for the one loss record is not indicative of what we have seen from Northwestern this year. It's quite interesting. So we'll talk to Brad Edwards about that and some other storylines around college football, including some of the holes in the schedule. If you're a college football fan, this might be the week where you say, honey, what do you want me to do around the house? It's like when Alabama takes on the Citadel, that's not necessarily, you know, great football. So we will talk to Brad about that at 9:35 here on ESPN 1000. 312-332-ESPN is our phone number. Glad to have you in here today. We start off talking about the Bears in that 6-3 window that they're in right now through the first 9 games of the season. I want you to think about this. When you look at the Bears, there's things that you know about the Bears and things that you don't know about the Bears. It's not all negative, because we're talking about a first-place team that is taking advantage of every opportunity that's afforded to them. Because look at 6-3. 6-3, not only are the Bears, but it's also Carolina. 6-3, the Washington Redskins. Houston, 6-3. Pittsburgh's 6-2-1. Minnesota's 5-3-1. Are the Bears 6-3 caliber? We asked that question, the poll question, at ESPN 1000 on Twitter. Are the Bears in a position where they have a 6-3 roster? I say yes, they do. You're looking for balance on both sides of the football. And I think against the Lions, you certainly saw that with the return of the Mac, with Khalil Mack coming back. Seeing what Roquan Smith did defensively and so many others in that secondary coming through for the Bears. And then from there, offensively, with Mitch Trubisky. Trubisky feels like that was the best game that he had in his career as he was able to help the Bears beat the Lions.
Yeah, it would probably be one of my best games. Just felt really comfortable out there. Thought the O-line played fantastic today, and we got open on the outsides. And it was just me doing my job, sitting back there and getting the ball to the playmakers. So I just felt really comfortable today. And I put the ball where I needed to go. And it's all a credit to my teammates and the work we put in practice.
He also was talking about going no huddled on that game against the Lions, how it seemed much faster offensively.
We had a nice little no huddle package today, just get them up on the line to lock them in the personnel. And we were just playing fast, so I think that plays into my skill set and something I'm comfortable with, just like playing fast so I'm not thinking as much as getting up to the line, seeing the defense, and then just going out there and making plays. But it all comes down to all 11 guys doing their job, and the O-line was fantastic today. And then when we got the right look for defense, receivers were getting open, and I was just putting the ball in the right spot. So that no huddle on the ball, it created a nice rhythm for the offense, and I think that's why we were able to have success on first and second down and just move the ball down the field real smoothly.
So thoughts there from Mitch Trubisky, the quarterback for the Bears. I think it's very simple that you would rather be, doesn't matter what football team you root for in the NFL, you'd rather be 6-3 than 3-6. I named for you the teams that have six or more wins, the teams like Carolina and Washington and Houston and Pittsburgh. Minnesota's 5-3-1. But those teams are similar to the Bears as far as the one-loss record is concerned. Would you rather be where the Bears are right now, trending in the right direction going into the Minnesota game? Or would you rather be 3-6? Would you rather be Tampa? Would you rather be Detroit or Denver or Jacksonville or Cleveland or where the Jets are at 3-7 or the Bills at 3-7? I just think that when you are a team that's trending in the right direction, you have to continue to just take it game by game. It's hard for some fans to do that, because you want to fast forward through the season and say, okay, what is this? Well, if you're not here for the ride, then you probably should get off the train. It's pretty simple. Because what you're seeing here is just a football team that's better than what many of us thought. It's one thing to be optimistic and say, oh, the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl every year. You more times than not, you'll be wrong about that. You can say, oh, the Bears are going to be successful every year, but you more times than not, you'll be wrong about that. But coming into this year, with Matt Nagy as the head coach, with a new offense, you didn't know what to expect. You thought there would be some training wheels on Mitch Trubisky, but every game there is some improvement. There's still things to be working on, though, but at the same time, there's still things to look at with this Bears team. I look forward to seeing what they do against Minnesota, because to me, you are living a charmed life when you're 6-3, top of the NFC North, when everyone looks at the Packers or the Vikings as the favorites. They very well, by the way, at season's end, very well could be on top of the Bears. Who knows? But at this point in time, you enjoy how things are working out so far for the Bears. As far as the Golden State Warriors are concerned, the NBA champions, they'll be taking on Atlanta tonight. You know, with every successful team, with every successful franchise, there's always going to be a little bit of drama. I can't name for you a successful team that didn't have a little bit of drama, or maybe have a wild card in their locker room, or their coach was a little bit odd. With the Golden State Warriors, they are the Alabama Crimson Tide of basketball. They're just that dominant because they come at you in waves. The system's right. The head coach is right. The roster is right. And when I look at this Warriors team, there's plenty of ego. Steph Curry. Steph Curry is beloved as a player. He has a swagger. He moves the shoulders around. He wants you to know that he's the best shooter in the NBA. I have no problem with that, but that's exactly who he is. And it's almost like a favored heel. He might not be popular in some cities, but I think as far as the NBA fans are concerned, they can understand how great he is as a player. And so there's a little swag to his game. And Draymond Green's got some dirt underneath their fingernails. And then there's Kevin Durant, who's a little bit confused and upset. He's got to have burner Twitter and burner Instagram because he feels like he's being beat up on. And there's Klay Thompson, got to decide what he wants to do at season's end and free agency. A lot of different personalities on that team. So what happened was during the Clippers game, there was a face-off between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant because Draymond Green, after the ball was missed and he was bringing the ball up instead of passing it to Kevin Durant with the game on the line, Draymond Green took the ball up, went across the timeline into the front court and fell. Game went into overtime. instead of giving it to the playmaker on the floor, he decided he wanted to do hero ball. If Steph Curry's on the floor for that play, that probably doesn't happen. But Draymond Green said, no, I got it, big man. And yeah, he got it right to the floor, and the game went in overtime against the Clippers. So now there's beef. Draymond Green, as well as Kevin Durant, were facing off in the huddle. They're mad at each other. It spilled into the locker room. If you read Adrian Wojnarowski and Shyam Charania, I mean, they were both reporting that there were some issues between both of those guys, to the point where it was so much yelling. Never had that kind of yelling in the locker room in the Steve Kerr championship era. That's how it was written today. So there's always going to be drama. But also was pointed out is that Draymond Green was like, so what's up with this free agency? That seems to linger over the Golden State Warriors on what Durant's going to do at this summer. Is he going to stay with the Warriors or will he go someplace else? Why is that a problem now in November? I don't know. But that seems to be in the back of the minds of definitely Draymond Green, if not some of the players. So now we turn to Nick Friedell, who covers the NBA for ESPN and ESPN.com. He joins us here as the Warriors get ready to take on the Hawks. We'll talk some Bulls and some NBA with him right here on ESPN 1000. Nick, as always, I appreciate you coming on the show.
You got it, my man.
How would you describe the sideline scuttlebutt between Draymond Green and Kevin Durant versus the Clippers?
Well, when you're first seeing the replays, because the angle that the press has, most of the press in Staples Center, you can't see, you can't have a clear picture into the sideline. So we're kind of in the locker room and we're seeing some of the replays that are starting to pop out on Twitter, and you're going, you know, Draymond and KD have gotten into it before. They're going to get into it again. What was telling was neither of them spoke to the media. And as stuff has started to come out now, of course, in the last 24 hours, you're going, oh, okay, things are making more sense. But I got to be honest, in the moment, and even talking to a few people today, I still think more of it is that families fight sometimes. I just talked to Draymond about his relationship with KD a couple weeks ago. He said, we keep each other in check. He keeps me in check. I keep him in check. And this is just another kind of wrinkle to a longer story for the Warriors. But the fact that they suspended Draymond for tonight's game, that is interesting. And, of course, I am sure there's going to be more about this over time. I just have a hard time believing that this incident is going to be kind of the beginning of the end of Durant and Draymond together working very well for the Warriors moving forward.
Do you think, do you believe the reports from Woj and other places that Kevin Durant's looming free agency is an issue for the team as far as the future is concerned? Because apparently one of the reports out there is Draymond Green calling out Kevin Durant in front of teammates about this free agency piece and not knowing what Durant's going to do after this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Durant's future hangs over everything with this team. And, of course, I've only been here about a month. I've talked to all the powers that be in that short time, Hoodie, but it's very clear while they're trying to push it all aside this year and they're trying to focus on winning another title this year, they all know what's possible. I mean, they all know that that storyline will hover over what they do throughout the season. So that part of it, absolutely, I think the front office is very cautious in how they handle stuff like this and what they want to do in making certain decisions. But that piece of this absolutely is huge because they know how key Kevin Durant is, not only for their team, but the future of the league, and they want to do everything they can to try and keep him for a long time in Golden State.
Nick, really, this also really speaks to how much of a leader that Steph Curry is, because he seems to be the glue to all of this. If he's available or if he's around yesterday, maybe this doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, he's the guy who has everybody's ear, but he doesn't go at it from such an emotional place most of the time like Draymond does. And that's key here. I think all of these guys really do love Draymond. I think he can be a pain in the ass sometimes, and he can drive them crazy. But they have a genuine affection for what he has done and what he's able to do sometimes in firing everybody up. But to your point about Steph is the guy who has everybody's ear and who can go in sometimes and just say a few words and get everybody back on track. He is universally respected within the organization because they know that everything starts with him. So if Steph were there, maybe this story plays out differently. I think if they win, this probably plays out differently. That's why, again, I don't believe that it's going to be some massive story that changes the narrative of this group. But it is something to watch, of course, and the fact that they suspended him, it says something about it. But Steph not being there and Steph not being around, he didn't make the trip to Los Angeles. That is a big factor in this.
I'll say this, as we talked to Nick Friedel, who covers the NBA for ESPN and ESPN.com, with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. For the game that you're covering tonight, it's going to take place at the bottom of the hour with the Atlanta and the Golden State Warriors. You know, Trae Young, I would love to see Trae Young against Steph Curry. We're not going to see that tonight. But I guess that with Draymond Green being out, I think that the Warriors, as is, should not have any problems taking on this young Hawks team. I think they should be fine tonight.
No, absolutely not. I mean, look, this is a perfect time in the schedule, frankly, for Golden State. Mm-hmm. Because instead of this thing lingering and getting all the play on all the talk shows in the next 48 hours or so, Golden State can go out and knock out a bad Hawks team, and then they can get themselves together for that Texas trip. They've got Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio over the next few days here. So the schedule gods usually don't do a lot of teams any favors, but in this case, I think they did Golden State a big favor. They can take some of the scrutiny off what's going on off the floor, put it what's going on the floor. Durant can have a nice game. And they can handle the situation however they want pre- and post-game. But if they go out and win, there are no big issues. This team is still the team to beat. I believe, having watched how that game unfolded against the Clippers and being around that locker room, that this is just something that happens over the course of the season. It happens in every locker room on every team. It's just that this team and these personalities have been in the microscope and under the microscope for so long that it's why it's getting more play now because of what went down.
All right, from the champs to the chump, let's go to Jimmy Butler. So Jimmy Butler traded to the 76ers. What was your initial reaction to the news that finally Glenn Taylor slash Tom Thibodeau was able to strike a deal with Elton Brand?
I'm just glad for all involved, Tony, that it's done, because I just saw Jimmy and Taj and Tibbs and Derek, all those guys in Oakland the other night. That locker room was just bad. You know, Jimmy's making all these comments. Oh, I love these guys. Come on. Wow. Like, I just figure all the people in Chicago are just nodding their heads like, yeah, okay. It needed to happen. In the short term, that's a good thing for the Timberwolves. In the long term, I'd be stunned if they got to the postseason. I think the next step, whether it happens in season or right after the season, is Tibbs probably gone from Minnesota. As far as Philly goes, look, I love Jimmy. He's earned everything he's gotten in the league, but he's also now earned a reputation as being a guy who can't get along with everybody in the locker room. I don't see it working in Philly. I don't see why, if you're Elton Brand, you would re-sign Jimmy to a Mega Max extension, knowing all the minutes he's played and the issues he's had with his knees already. So, he's going to get his money somewhere. He's earned it. But if you're Philly, that is a gigantic roll of the dice, knowing what you already know about his personality and what's happened in his last two stops, both in Chicago and Minnesota.
Yeah, my next question regarding that is, there's no way I make that deal unless I know Jimmy's going to stay for at least, you know, 4, 5, 6 years. Because, you know, you can look at his age. You can look at maybe he's going to be on the wrong side of 30 here coming up in a little bit. You don't know. You would imagine his numbers, especially offensively, would stay around the same. But it's a huge roll of the dice, because his Hollywood types don't come to Philly. They come to Los Angeles. Right. They come to Boston. They come to New York. And so that's why I found it curious that Elton Brand traded away all of his, you know, a couple of guys that could create their own shot, and for Jimmy Butler for a rental. So you don't see Jimmy in Philadelphia for the long haul?
Well, and that's the key. The most surprising part about the other day, Hoodie, was you see the tweets come out about the trade, and you go, okay, it's finally over. Mm-hmm. And then there was another tweet from Woj, and he comes out and says, you know, the Sixers have talked to Jimmy and his representation about, you know, the next extension. And I'm with you. You can't make that move unless you know he's going to stay or he wants to stay. If I'm the Sixers, though, the point is, after all this time trusting the process and collecting all these assets, trying to get the right fit around Embiid and Simmons, you land on Jimmy, who is going to be 30 next year, who's played a ton of minutes. I just don't believe that he's that piece that's going to get you to where you want to go. So now this is your team. And if you don't do it this year, when are you going to do it if you're Philly? Because this is your group, and you've cut out some of the depth with Saric in Covington. So I believe they're better. I don't believe they're good enough in the East, and I think it's going to be a real issue to try and get Jimmy's personality long-term to fit into the framework of the personalities that are already in that Philly locker room.
Mello.
No.
No, I don't have it. I don't have a question. I just want to say Mello, because Mello.
Yeah, and so inevitably, anybody who says Mello right now, the answer should be no. Don't sign him.
Wait a minute.
Don't trade for him. Don't nothing. Just no. Just, I love Mello. I was with him at Syracuse. He's done. It's done.
You think he's done? Now here's what I would say. The game has passed Mello by. But you can say that about Rudy Gay, too, and he still gets shots. I'm just saying, like,
for he gets checks.
Yeah, I'm just saying, for an ISO player, a selfish ISO player in today's NBA does not work, clearly.
No. I mean, it's like what you and I watched in Chicago with Dwayne Wade at the end. I mean, can Mello and Wade still do some nice things in certain games for a team? Absolutely. But can they play to the level that we've been so accustomed to seeing them play during Hall of Fame careers? No. That part is over. And for two guys with the egos that both of those guys have, I think it'd be hard to just play 10, 15 minutes and, you know, have a really bit part on a team going nowhere. So I think both of those guys at this point in their careers fall in the same category.
Well, I will ask you about Toronto as I let you go. Toronto, you know, I've been hard on Toronto the last few years, and rightfully so, because the DeRozan-Lowry combo just had a ceiling on its success. But I will give Toronto this. The difference between DeRozan and Leonard is Kawhi is a top-10 player, and DeRozan never was. So does that give you the kind of feeling that Toronto will pay you, will take it to yet another level here because Leonard's on this team?
It has a chance, and that's what Masai Ujiri did with that deal, Hoodie. He gave his team a chance. Kawhi is unbelievable when he's healthy. I think people forgot that last season because he didn't play, and there are all the issues behind the scenes in San Antonio. If Kawhi stays healthy, Toronto has a puncher's chance. But to me, it's Boston, then it's Toronto, and then it's everybody else. I don't even think Philly, again, from what we've talked about, I don't think they're that close to either of those first two teams. Yeah, Toronto has a reasonable chance with Kawhi, but if it's my money, I'm still betting on Boston if they stay healthy with that roster and that coach.
Bulls are 4-10.
Yes, they are.
As always, my friend, I appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on the show.
I miss you. Talk to you soon.
It is Nick Friedell, who covers the NBA like a blanket for ESPN and ESPN.com, with us here on ESPN 1000. Brad Edwards on the college football playoff is next.
You're listening to my mans and them.
Just a man that's on the mic. And when we rock up on the mic, we rock the mic.
Right? Jay Hood. On ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. You're listening to Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
You're listening to Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. So glad that you're with us. We turn to the man who, one of the hosts on College Game Day right here on ESPN Radio, here on ESPN 1000 every Saturday. Brad Edwards is with us here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app with Jonathan Hood. Hello, Brad.
What's going on, Jonathan? It is an odd spot, I think, in the college football season. Last week was about as uneventful as it feels like it could get, you know, with the top 10 and the committee rankings all winning. And now we have a weekend on paper that looks even worse. So we'll see what happens.
Why is there always a hole in the schedule this late? Why, Brad? I mean,
yeah.
you want momentum from September. You don't want to go backwards.
Right. A lot of it has to do with the SEC, because this, you know, weekend before the rivalry games is when the SEC has recently started, you know, having cupcake weekend. And I can't blame them for doing it, considering that there are no repercussions for it. I mean, they have an 8-game conference schedule, so they have one more non-conference game than almost everybody else. And instead of playing them all in September, they're carrying one over late season. And look, I think every coach out there, if given the option, would say, yeah, I'd love to have basically a controlled scrimmage, a chance to get some guys some rest the weekend before the rivalry game. And if you're a playoff contender, it's also, you know, giving you a chance to rest up for that back-to-back of rivalry and then conference championship game. And so I think they would all take it if they had the option. And, you know, it's easy to blame the SEC for doing it, but if the committee is not going to hold it against them, then why would they stop? And at this point, there's no evidence that the committee ever would hold it against them. So you're going to get pretty much Drek out of the SEC this weekend every year, and it just so happens that very few compelling games are taking place elsewhere in the country. And so, therefore, we got Syracuse, Notre Dame, and that's about it.
That's true. And having said that, it's very clear, Brad, last couple of weeks that there are teams that are going after Tua. And you saw in the last game that there's teams that are going after his knees. I don't think that was a mistake. I think there's some teams that just want to knock out Tua and get him out of the game, or just try to rattle him as much as possible. So is it smart for Tua to play against the Citadel, a team that they can clearly beat with their third string?
Well, first of all, I don't think there's any reason the Citadel would go after his knees. Like, if other teams have done that, I can't imagine that it would be in their game plan. Like, as much as they're competitors and no one's going out there, you know, saying, hey, we're going to lose before the game kicks off, I don't think the Citadel is going with an expectation of victory here. So I think they're just hoping to have a few highlights and stay healthy and all that. On top of it, they shouldn't be able to get a lot of pressure on him. LSU wasn't able to get a lot of pressure on him, so the Citadel shouldn't really be able to get any. So I get it. You know, coming off of their worst offensive performance of the season, I understand why Saban wants to at least have him out there for a few series, get things clicking again with the offense, everyone feeling good about what they're doing before they go into the Iron Bowl the next week. So I understand where he's coming from. And I'm guessing that this is not something that the doctors consider to be, you know, just right there on the verge of being a season-ending injury. I'm guessing, even though we haven't been told this, that it's more along the lines of, hey, it's just a matter of his pain threshold, you know, where it's going to hurt to play on it, but it's not necessarily going to make it worse. So that's my take. And of course, the other layer to this, Jonathan, is that Jalen Hurts is not healthy either. I mean, he has not been available for the last two games. Saban said on Monday that he's day to day this week, so it's not even a lock that he'll be able to play. And, you know, I know it's the Citadel, but you still don't want to trot your third-string quarterback out there, because you're basically accomplishing nothing on offense if you've got a quarterback in there with the rest of the first team who is never going to be handing off or throwing passes to them in a significant game moment down the road. So all of that comes into play here. But there's no question that Tua's knee is a big deal as far as what, you know, a lot of people have come to think is a foregone conclusion that Alabama wins the national championship. If he's not out there and he's not close to 100%, then it changes a lot.
Brad Edwards from College Game Day on ESPN 1000. Also catch him on the Campus Conversation podcast. He joins me, Jonathan Hood, on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. Northwestern's success, is it predicated on the division or their own hustle?
I think it's both. I mean, certainly they're what we love to call a scrappy team, in that you're always going to get a great effort from them. You know, you look at this run. I think it's what now 13 of 14 games they've won in Big Ten play going back to last year, and that, I mean, that's hard to do. I don't care what Power Five league you're in, that's tough for any team to do. But I think if you take a closer look at who they've beaten along the way, well, I guess they've lost to the best team they played during that stretch, which was Michigan this year, and they haven't really pulled a major upset anywhere. So yeah, certainly there's a part of it that's an element of scheduling. And look, when you're 6-4, and I believe all four losses are at home, off the top of my head, and you know that includes losses to Akron and a double digit loss to Duke. I mean, if you're 6-4 with that resume, and you've clinched the division with 2 weeks still left to play, I think it says the division competition has something to do with it as well.
The reason why I ask you that question is because of the how you outlined the losses. Early in the season, Brad, I mean, you're going to lose to Duke. I can understand that. That's a tough game for anybody. Losing at home, okay. The Akron loss is alarming to me because I don't think Akron hasn't beat a Big Ten team, was it, since 1890s or something like that.
Yeah, it was kind of flukish, if I remember correctly. Like, there was major turnover luck there for Akron, but still not a game you would expect a decent Big Ten team to lose.
That's why there in the city there's this, it's not an uneasiness, but just a scratching of a head, just trying to figure out who they are. It's very winnable the next couple of games against Row Your Boat in Minnesota and against Illinois, but the ebb and flow of the season is very interesting, I guess you could say, for the Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, look, it has been, and we've seen this out of them before. This is not the first year that's kind of been like this. But what I think is maybe the most compelling part of it is that they were highly competitive with Michigan in that lone conference loss, and you know, they had that 17-0 lead, ended up losing by a field goal. And so, whether it's Michigan or Ohio State as the opponent in the Big Ten championship game, I don't think we can sit there and say that Northwestern has no chance. I mean, they've shown an ability, even with the Notre Dame game, to hang around with good teams. And the longer you can stay within one score, you get into the fourth quarter in a one-score game, and there's a lot that can happen. And so I haven't seen anything to lead me to believe that Northwestern should get blown out. And so I think that makes the game compelling, even though I understand there won't be a lot of national interest because – people outside of the Big Ten who don't know much about Northwestern won't expect the game to be close, and I'm guessing the point spread won't suggest that it should be close, but I would, in a lot of ways, be surprised if it's not.
With the Purdue coming in 5-5 coming into this weekend's games, if Jeff Brohm takes the Louisville job, is that a step up or a step sideways for him?
You could make the argument either way. I mean, certainly one way to look at it is that, you know, at Louisville, you're in the same division with Clemson, and if Florida State gets better, which we would assume they will within the next few years, that you've got them in your division also. Whereas if you stay at Purdue, I mean, Wisconsin, Nebraska, you know, that seems to be your biggest competition. And so even though I think you could probably recruit a little bit higher level of player to Louisville, maybe your resources are a little bit greater there, I'm not sure your ability to win your division is greater at Louisville. And so that's kind of how I would break it down. But I think you also have to recognize that just 2 years ago, with Lamar Jackson as the quarterback, and I realize he's a generational talent, but they were basically one play away from winning the ACC Atlantic Division. I mean, they had a narrow loss at Clemson, the same season they blew out Florida State. And even though it kind of fell apart at the end as they lost some non-conference games, in conference, they were very good that year. And so I don't think it's a stretch to think that Jeff Brohm, if the head coach at Louisville, could get another very talented quarterback to come there. Certainly he has a reputation, as does Bobby Petrino, of being a really good offensive coach. And I think because he's younger and has more energy and, you know, maybe other factors as well, is going to be a better recruiter to Louisville than Petrino was. And so maybe the talent around that quarterback could be better. So there is evidence to suggest that it's not impossible. you know, to have a really good team at Louisville, even though, yeah, sure, there are a lot of things that Clemson and Florida State have that Louisville doesn't. So I don't know. I'll be fascinated to see what he does, because I think you can make that argument either way. Part of this may have to do with what's his end goal. You know, does he fancy himself as coaching a national title contender at some place that's above Louisville on the ladder? Because if he's ultimately planning to move on, maybe it's best not to go to your alma mater and then leave them after a few years. You might make more enemies than friends by doing that. Or you could look at it as, hey, my alma mater is in a mess right now. They need me. I can do a lot of good, even if I only stay for a few years. So there are definitely arguments on both sides of this one.
I love the numbers that you give, Brad, but I trust your eyes more. So I'll ask you, instead of interviewing the computer, the best one-loss team that you've seen so far is whom?
I would say Michigan right now. I think Georgia is right there, and our metrics would say that Georgia is the best one-loss team. In fact, our metrics would say Georgia is better than Notre Dame also. But if you look at where the teams are on the current trajectory, I'm not saying that Georgia isn't playing well, because clearly the last 3 weeks they've played a lot better, but Michigan really over the last 2 months, I think, has played better than Georgia if you're looking at the more recent body of work. So you could certainly take both sides of that. But I think at the moment, Michigan probably playing a little bit better than Georgia. And ultimately, when you get in really big games, I'm going to side with the team that plays better defense. And even though Georgia certainly has a lot of talent, given the returning experience of both teams and what we've seen them do so far this year, I don't think there's any question that Michigan is the better defense of the two at this point. And so I would lean toward the Wolverines.
Brad Edwards with Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We've had so many conversations over the years, Brad, regarding Notre Dame and seeing what's going to happen with Brian Kelly. Hot seat, tepid seat, cold seat. And I tell you, this Irish team is looking as good as I've seen in the Kelly administration. What impresses you most about what you've seen from Notre Dame?
Well, I guess I'd have to go with the defense, because, I mean, outside of the 2012 season, that's typically been an issue for Notre Dame. You know, it's just not either not having enough talent or not having enough depth on the defensive side. They've usually been able to score, and so I think that that's probably the biggest thing. I especially look at their pass defense. I think, you know, between having a good secondary and a quality pass rush, they've kind of flipped the script there, and they are strong in some areas where we haven't always seen them be strong, and I think that's made the difference. Now, certainly, you got to give Kelly a lot of credit for making the quarterback change when he did it. And most coaches, they kind of need a loss to be the impetus for making a quarterback switch, especially when it's a guy who's a returning starter from the year before. So I think you got to give him credit there for making that change, and certainly that's made a difference as well. But I think if you're going to, you know, compare it to previous seasons, the difference is that they're a good bit better on defense.
Where's your show this weekend?
Fortunately, we are in Bristol, because there aren't many games worth going to this week. And then on top of it, we are getting the benefit of an abbreviated show. So instead of the usual 7 hours, we're only on from 11 to 2 your time. So it's only a 3-hour show this week, which is fine with me, because there's just not a lot to get excited about on the schedule. So we'll kind of have a pseudo bye week for our show, and then we'll dive back in for rivalry week.
So they gypped you out of a trip to Orlando to cover UCF, like,
yeah,
the TV version.
That would have been nice. We're supposed to get, I think, about 6 inches of snow here in Connecticut on Thursday. Not that anyone in Chicago is going to feel sorry for us on that front, but yeah, when you're getting snow dumped on you in November, it would be nice to take off the next day and fly out to Orlando. But no such luck this week. But we are going to the ACC championship game, which is in Charlotte. You know, it's not Orlando. but at least it'll be warmer than Connecticut. So we'll do that in a couple weeks. And look, I hope the weather's nice because the game is not looking too good on paper right now.
No. Well, it's too bad you get a chance to see the national champions in person, but as UCF would tell you. What did the computer say when you put in UCF? The computer must laugh, right? At least the computer must smile. I know the computer is supposed to be emotionless and supposed to be right down the line, but they must at least, the computer must smile at the fact that UCF and UCF fans continue to push them as a Power 5 team or a top 4 or 5 team.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how they handle that on game day Saturday morning, because that is the big beef, of course, with the UCF fans, is that they want to make the case. Look, I think they all want to make the case that the playoff field should be bigger, that it should be 8 instead of 4. But in the absence of an 8-team playoff, they have to make the case that they should be in the top 4. And I'm looking forward to see how that argument is presented, because – I mean, ultimately, it comes down to this. Well, this is what we always say when it's Selection Sunday in basketball, and someone's trying to argue that a certain bubble team should have gotten in. The question always becomes, okay, well, if you put them in, who are you taking out? You know, you can't have an extra team in the field. Someone has to come out, so who is it? And sometimes there's a good answer to that, sometimes there's not. But in this case, if you're going to put UCF in, who are you taking out? I mean, do you think they should be in over Michigan, over Georgia? You know, you start looking at those teams, and it just kind of becomes ludicrous to think about it, to even suggest that they're better than one of those teams. But I think that's the argument that some of them will try to make on Saturday morning, and you know, we'll see how that turns out. But our metrics, our computer, doesn't think that they're a top 10 team. In fact, it doesn't think they're a top 20 team. But I'll stop right there, because anything else is just unnecessary piling on. But that's the way we see it.
Oh, man. UCF, not a chance with any of those teams. Well, that's what I think the majority of the country looks at. But I know UCF is strong. They feel strong in their conviction. So we'll see how that works out on game day on Saturday.
Hey, I would, too. If I were a UCF fan, I would be really ticked off about it. And I have to keep that in sight whenever I talk about them, because any fan of their program should be upset to be in the only sport in the world, probably, where you can win all of your games and have no shot to win the championship.
Yeah, it's tough. Brad, I'm glad you spent some time with in Chicago. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
All right, anytime, Jonathan. Have a good night.
Brad Edwards with us here as he hosts College Game Day on ESPN Radio here every Saturday right here on ESPN 1000.
Jonathan Hood on ESPN 1000. Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Weeknights on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
And we thank you for listening to the program here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. We will have a shortened show tomorrow, because we have Notre Dame basketball. They take on Radford. So we'll be on after that game. I'm thinking a 6 o'clock start. So I'm thinking like 8:30, 8:45 tomorrow.
Yeah, usually 8:30.
Yeah.
We kick in.
8:45 tomorrow, whenever Jack's done. 8:45 or so right here on the home of the Irish, ESPN 1000. We'll be on until 10 at that time. So look for me. If you're looking for me, I'll be on after Notre Dame basketball. You tune in at 7, you won't get me. But you'll get me around 8:30, 8:45. So we'll have plenty to talk about at that point in time right here on ESPN 1000. Our thanks to you for listening. Our thanks to Dan Jiggets, Nick Friedel, Brad Edwards for being our guests. The show produced by Felix and Sean on the other side of the glass. So we'll do this tomorrow, about 8:30 to 10, right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. And don't forget the Under the Hood podcast. Wherever you download your podcast, download Under the Hood with Jonathan Hood. Hit that subscribe button. And for you iTunes, Apple Music people, I would love 5 stars in a review. It helps with our situation over at Apple Music. So for Felix and Sean, it's Jonathan Hood. 5 stars in review. Sean even hasn't given me 5 stars in review. He hasn't even done that.
I gave you 10.
Yeah, but that was at the church.
Jonathan Hood.
5 stars.
Hey,
ESPN 1000.